So this verse, in terms of outline and themes of verses, this verse describes the matchless beauty of Krishna. Translation. I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is adept in playing on his flute, with blooming eyes like lotus petals, with head decked with peacock's feather, with the figure of beauty tinged with the hue of blue clouds, and his unique loveliness charming millions of cupids. I'll read the purport. This purport is also on... Prabhupada speaks this purport on his tape, where he sings the Chintamani prayers. I wish we had the tape to play Prabhupada, because then we could hear Prabhupada speaking this purport. But I don't have all that. Because in my ear, I just hear Prabhupada's voice when I read this. It says, the matchless beauty of Krishna, the Supreme Lord of Golok, is being described. Krishna, the all-pervading cognition, has a spiritual form of his own. That can also be said, Krishna, the almighty consciousness, has a spiritual form by nature. The form of Krishna is not a fanciful creation of imagination formed after visualizing the beautiful things of the world. What Brahma saw in his ecstatic trance of pure devotion is being described, Krishna engaged in playing upon his flute. That flute, by his enchanting musical sound, attracts the hearts of all living beings. That can also be said like this, that last sentence. The beautiful dancing notes of that flute steal away the hearts of all living beings. Just as a lotus petal produces a pleasant sight, so the two beautiful eyes of Krishna, who causes the manifestation of our spiritual vision, displays the unlimited splendor and beauty of his moon-like face. It can also be said almost in the same way. Just as a lotus petal produces a pleasant sight, so the two beautiful eyes of Krishna cause the revelation of divine vision and expand the unlimited and splendor and beauty of his moon-like face. In other words, what's being said here is that at some point, just by the practice of taking Krishna's darshan, which comes under the category of archanam, to worship the Lord, serve the Lord, and see the Lord, take darshan of the Lord, and offer prayers, vandanam, archanam, and vandanam. Because usually you come and you see the Lord, you see the archamurti of the Lord, and then there's vandanam. Or you worship, you're a pujari, and you worship the Lord directly, either manasi, in your mind, or externally, in a murti form. And then you offer vandanam. There's so many, so it's archanam vandanam, sakyam dasyam atman vedanam. So you'll take darshan and offer prayers. So that practice, which is the practice of bhakti, will purify the consciousness to the point that one actually comes to the platform of Swarup Siddhi, or you can say Vishuddha Sattva. So when one is actually purified to that point where he contacts his Bhakti Shakti or Vishuddha Sattva, then he can see the Lord. That's what it says. He causes the manifestation of our spiritual vision. In other words, Krishna, the personal Swarup Shakti of the Lord, is also called Vishuddha Sattva. Swarup Shakti. That Swarup Shakti is Ladini and Samvit. So that comes down from the Lord. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. So Sankirtan purifies us, purifies our heart, and Krishna's service purifies our heart. Then when Krishna is pleased, then he bestows upon us his Swarup Shakti. His Swarup, his own personal Shaktis. And then when we contact Swarup Shakti, that is generally equated with Bhava. And in Bhava, so many ecstasies are experienced, and then you can see the Lord as he is, and you have this divine revelation, and you can actually see the Lord and have darshan. He causes the manifestation or the revelation of our spiritual vision. The loveliness that adorns his head with peacock figures, the corresponding feature of the spiritual beauty of Krishna. His characteristic celestial beauty is set off by the charming ornament of the peacock feather that adorns his head. I believe, it is my idea, that this sentence in the book where it says peacock feather figures, I guess, anyway, that second translation is a little more clear. In other words, he has a beautiful peacock feather. Just as a mass of blue clouds offers a specifically soothing, pleasant view. In other words, just like when you see, if you see a beautiful mass of rain clouds in the sky, beautiful blue and bluish gray, it's very soothing and comforting to the mind and heart to see such a sight. The complexion of Krishna is compared with that, is analogously tinged with a spiritual dark blue color. So as one feels some satisfaction and some soothing, pleasant feelings by seeing a bank of rain clouds, Madhurya Kadambini, or Kadambini. In the same way, when one has that rare darshan, or has a darshan of the form of Krishna, he also feel very soothed and pleasant. The beauty and loveliness of Krishna is far more enchanting than that of Cupid multiplied a million times. So what does this mean? I mean, it's pretty obvious, because it says here in the Sanskrit, it says koti. Kandarpa koti kamaniyam. Kamaniyam. Charming. Kandarpa koti. Bahu koti. Right, we sing the song in the evening time, Sandhyartik. Bahu koti chandrajini. The Lord Chaitanya's face is more effulgent and radiantly beautiful than Bahu koti chandra. Than many bahu, many millions and millions of full moons cannot, they pale in comparison to the beautifully soothing and effulgent face of Gaurachand, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here it's explained that Krishna, he's more beautiful than millions of Cupids. So his beauty and loveliness is far more enchanting than that of Cupid multiplied a million fold. So Cupid is, of course, a personality, Kandarpa or Kamadev, and he has a wife also, Rati. But this verse also means that we, as conditioned souls, we are attracted by Maya. So Maya means Cupid. So Cupid for the man is, you could say, woman, and Cupid for the woman is man. And this material energy is Cupid for the man and woman. But when one is attracted by the loveliness, let's say the beauty and loveliness of Krishna, and then that attraction, that enchantment and captivation is so extraordinary and so excellent, super excellent, and so superior that it seems that if you compare that to the attraction of man or woman or the ephemeral objects of this temporary material world, then they seem like nothing. Cupid and the whole material world and all the most beautiful women in the world and the most handsome, powerful, strong men in the world, there Krishna's charmingness and loveliness is millions and millions of times more. That's what Brahma is saying. And Brahma is the creator of all the different things of this world. And he's saying, well, in other words, he's trying to describe Krishna. And how can you describe something that's indescribable? Krishna's often the writers of transcendental literature are trying to use language of Sanskrit or Bengali to describe the Lord. They use words like adbhuta, like we say in adbhuta mandir. They say he's indescribable. He's chamatkar. He's indescribable. He's astonishing, astounding, and adbhuta. He's indescribably beautiful. Because we've produced some books with some devotee translators, and the word that keeps coming up is adbhuta rupam, adbhuta, adbhuta, which means incomparable, matchless, like we say, Prabhupada sometimes says, matchless beauty. That's why Prabhupada chuckled when he got the first temple on 2nd Avenue. It was a gift shop selling various sundry gifts and whatnot, and it said, matchless gifts. And the first line of the purport, the matchless beauty of Krishna, the Supreme Lord of Goloka, is being described. Well, matchless is how they would translate the word Adbhuta in 1925. In 1999, the translators will translate Adbhuta to incomparable, which is what we did. But so that we're more familiar with, in our English language, the word incomparable than matchless, isn't it? But matchless is very nice. There's no match. Matchless. Less a match. You can't find a match. You're matchless. Nothing to compare it to. There's no match means comparison. So like that, Brahma is trying in his own way to use his language of Sanskrit, which is what the Deva Nagari. The Nagari, the people that live in the Devas that live in the Naga, live in those heavenly planets, they speak in Sanskrit. So Brahma speaks in Sanskrit. So he said, Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. So he's trying to, in other words, he's saying Krishna is really beautiful. And it's astoundingly beautiful. So we have some notes. Any questions about any of this so far? This verse basically, it brings us to, now that we're coming, we finished up with Chintamani Dham, the actual Dham itself, and the ornaments of the Dham. Last year when Radha Govinda Maharaj was giving Bhagavad Saptaha, he quoted some tikkas in relation to the 10th canto, where he was saying, he was quoting Balavacharya's commentaries on the 10th canto, which are very rustic and very sweet. And he was saying that, what makes Vrindavan Vrindavan? And he said, it's the ornaments of Vrindavan. This is Vrindavan. And when we talk about Chintamani Dham or Vrindavan Dham, Chintamani Dham, we're talking about these things. The cows, the trees, the water, the Jamuna, the Govardhan, and the gopis with water pots in their head, which I think I mentioned before. These are the ornaments that make up the Chintamani Dham. So in verse 29, Lord Brahma, he's describing the Dham of Vrindavan, and he's mentioning these very points about the Kalpavriksha, about the desire trees, and the cows and the trees, and then he's talking about the gopis. He says, hundreds of thousands of Lakshmis or gopis. Lakshmis in Vaikuntha, but gopis in Brajagokul. So what do those gopis do? Are they just walking around? No, they're making cow dung patties, and they're singing, and they're churning butter and yogurt, and they're carrying water pots in their heads, and they're taking care of calves, and doing so many cooking, and so many things they're doing. And of course, dancing in Rasalila, and playing music, and pushing swings, and squirting Krishna with color, and all kinds of loving services they're engaged in. But when Brahma starts to describe Vrindavan, he says, these are the things of Vrindavan. What makes Vrindavan Vrindavan? What makes the spiritual world of Vrindavan Chintamani Dham? Is this the cows and the trees and the gopis? So what makes this Vrindavan? Is the gopis, I mean the Brijvasis, and then the trees, where are they? And then the cows, where are they? There's all buffalo everywhere. Instead of having trees, we have cement buildings. Instead of having cows, we have buffaloes. So that was that verse. Now, okay, that's the setting, that's the place. Now who's the center of that whole place? What makes the whole place tick? What is everyone revolving about? Well, now he talks about Krishna, the matchless beauty of Krishna. So Krishna, of course, is to be distinguished from all other avatars or forms of Godhead. There's so many Bhagavans, but Krishna is a Swayam Bhagavan. Ate Chamsa Kala Pumsa. Krishna is two Bhagavan Swayam. Shukadeva Goswami explains that he's a Swayam. He's the origin of all the other Bhagavans. Narayan, Vishnu, Ram, Adi, Murti, Shukala, Niyamena, Tishtan. Ram, Adi, beginning with Ram and all other Kala, Amsha, or the different expansion avatars of the Lord, Krishna is the source. Govinda Mani Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. We sing that prayer every morning in this class. I mean, every day in this class. Ram Adi Murtishu, beginning with the form of Ram, and all the other partial and complete incarnations are actually expanded from Govinda. So Govinda, what makes Govinda Govinda is his special qualities. So there's four special qualities that Krishna has, which are his sweetnesses. His Rupa Madhurya, the sweetness of his bodily form. and his Veno Madhurya, the sweetness of his flute playing, his all-attractive flute, and his Prema Madhurya, and his Leela Madhurya, sweet pastimes and sweet love. And when Krishna, when someone becomes embraced by Krishna, or Prabhupada used to say, you should embrace Krishna consciousness. You should take up Krishna consciousness. It is sweet. It is, what is the difficulty? Prabhupada would sometimes be on a morning walk, and he would stop, and the devotees would surround him, Brahmananda and Rameshwar and Jayatirtha and different devotees that were there in LA at the time. And he'd look at them and he'd say, so, what is the difficulty? Is there any difficulty? Is there, Krishna consciousness is very sweet. It's very enjoyable. What is the problem? What is the difficulty? And devotees were kind of like grumbling, but not, they were kind of like grumbling and mumbling amongst themselves, well, Prabhupada, you know, we're young and we're passionate and, you know, it's not, it used to make it sound easy, but it's not so easy. It's pretty hard and, you know, it's pretty tough getting up and it's tough staying up and moving up and all that, chanting. So then Prabhupada said, so there was a silence. No one answered. He said, so what is the difficulty? He said, is there any difficulty in chanting and dancing? Is that not pleasurable? And the devotee said, yes, Prabhupada, that is pleasurable. So, is there any difficulty in eating nice prasadam? Taking nice Krishna prasadam? Rasgullas, rubberies, kachori, sweet rice, sabji, cheese sabji, and kofta balls, and halva, and all the stuff we never get in India? is there any difficulty? And the devotee said, no, Prabhupada. And so what about nice songs, nice poems, nice songs, singing songs and bhajans, glorifying Krishna and Gauranga, and nice music and dancing, and nice poetry and singing bhajans? Is that any difficulty? No, Prabhupada, that's not any difficulty. And what about philosophy? A very stimulating philosophy describing reality and the modes of nature and the other planets and the soul and the body and God. Very exciting, interesting, detailed description of reality. Isn't that very, that's very wonderful and nice, isn't it? Yes, Prabhupada. And so, what is the difficulty? Why are the devotees leaving? Why are they having this? And so the devotee said, Prabhupada, there's no difficulty. I mean, you couldn't really argue sometimes with Prabhupada. It was a very forceful presentation. We can only argue with ourselves for our lack of applying ourselves or being able to take it up for our own, whatever. So this, these sweetnesses are there in Krishna. Everything's sweet about Krishna. And this verse, Brahma, he's starting to show us about two of the sweetnesses of Krishna, his Rupa Madhurya and Veno Madhurya. So it starts, Venam Kwananta Maravinda, then he starts describing Krishna's beautiful form. So this is, the Acharyas use this line of definition when they want to distinguish or position and define Krishna as being above and beyond all the other avatars. Krishna is more than Ram. Krishna is more than Vishnu, more than Narayan. He is the topmost and supreme. So Narayan Bhaktas, Vishnu Bhaktas, Ram Bhaktas will say, why? How? Prove it. What is the proof? And so this is what the Acharyas, this is how the Acharyas prove the preeminence and super excellent position of Krishna by these four points, Leela Madhurya, Veena Madhurya, Rupa Madhurya, and Prema Madhurya. And then they explain about each of those things. So this is, Brahma is starting to go into that. And this is how the Acharyas describe these sweetnesses. This is from Bhagavat Marichimala. No, not Bhagavat Marichimala. Bhagavat Amrita Kana by Vishnu Chakravartipad. He explains these four points of distinction, and then he explains what they mean. Leela Madhurya, in other words, Krishna's quality of having sweet pastimes, Leela Madhurya. Madhurya means sweet, like madhu, honey. Krishna's pastimes in Braj surpass all other pastimes in sweetness because Krishna's subjugation by love is the greatest in Braj. In other words, love, that's the power of love in general and in specific application to Krishna, is that love has the power to subjugate or control the beloved. The love of a wife can control the husband, and the love of a husband can control the wife, the love of a child can control the mother, and the love of a mother can control the child. Just like the child doesn't want to go to school, doesn't want to study, but the mother kind of her love. She says, "Look, you know, you're my child. I've given you so much. Don't you love me? Please, you know, if you love me, do your studies. Don't play. You have to, you know, do your studies and become learned and get a good degree and all this." So the mother's love is smothering the child, so reciprocating, he will do what she wants. He will be controlled by the love of the mother and do what she wants. In the same way, a husband's controlled by the love of the wife and does what she wants, and vice versa. So that's the nature of love, is that it has the power to subjugate or control the beloved. So Krishna himself, of course, all qualities come from him, and he exhibits that quality in his leelas as Lord Vishnu. He's controlled by the love of his devotees. When his devotee's in trouble, Prahlad Maharaj is a devotee of Vishnu. He's doing Vishnu Smaranam. So he's in trouble. Hiranyakashipu is trying to kill him in so many ways, and every time Vishnu comes and saves him. When he gets thrown off a cliff, then Krishna, as a super soul, he gives him automatically the city. Automatically, he has all mystic cities bestowed upon him because he's a pure devotee of the Lord. He's a Shanta Bhakta, Shuddha Bhakta, Prahlad. So as soon as Prahlad was thrown off the cliff, Lord Vishnu in the heart gave him Lagima Siddhi. Lagima Siddhi means your body becomes as light as a cotton feather, as a cotton piece of cotton. So then you just, if you go to a mountaintop and throw a piece of cotton off the mountaintop, a little sprig of cotton, what will it do? It will just float in the wind. So that's what happened to Prahlad Maharaj. So, the point is that Krishna is subjugated by the love of his devotees. So in Braj, this Leela Madhurya, this, and the pastimes that Krishna shows in Vrindavan, the pastimes of Krishna with his Braj devotees, Braj Bhaktas, or his Braj Basis, in those Leelas, in those pastimes, not the pastimes of Ram, or Vishnu, or Narayan, but the pastimes of Krishna and Braja Gokul with his Braj Basis, they show the highest power of subjugation, where they just clap their hands and Krishna starts dancing. And the elderly gopis clap their hands, and Krishna Kumar, you know, the Krishna Kumar means little, you know, 4-year-old boy. He starts dancing, and they just clap their hands. They say, "You dance, we'll give you some sweets and some butter and some misery." So he's dancing, just to please them. So their parental love is so great that he will dance like a puppet in their hands. His Krishna's flute, and Vidagdha Madhav by Rupa Goswami explains that. How unique the sound of Krishna's flute is, because of course we've all had the experience of hearing flute, and maybe some of us have made or played flutes before, and it's a very bewitching and soothing and satisfying sound. Most everyone will agree to that, and even the animals like the sound of the flute, especially the deer. So in Lord Shiva, in Vidagdha Madhav, Rupa Goswami explains some of the effects. So when Krishna plays his flute, although Lord Shiva is always dancing in abandon and playing his din-din drum, when he hears the sound of Krishna's flute, he just drops his din-din drum. A din-din drum is, you know, these little, you see all these people during the Shravan Mas, they're selling all these little plastic drums, da 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 da, and it drives you crazy because all these little kids from Delhi, they buy them, and they walk all around Vrindavan smacking on them and, you know, cracking on them. But that's Lord Shiva's instrument. It's din-din or damru. And that's the sound of when you hear earthquakes. If you ever heard an earthquake, you know you have something. When the earth lets out a cry, when it cracks in half, that's something like the sound of a din-din drum. And Lord Brahma, when he's sitting on the lotus flower coming out of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and when he hears the flute, he just becomes completely bewildered. He becomes Vimohan. And then Lord Shesha, it says that Lord Shesha, not the Shesh, Balaram's expansion, he's holding up the universes. And when he hears the sound of Krishna's flute, he starts swaying. Na 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 na. You know, like if you ever see these guys that come to Vrindavan with these Shaivites with the baskets, especially if you're Westerners, they usually go up to you more often. They don't go so much to the Indians, but they go to the Westerners. Say, "Hey, Cobra, you want to see Cobra?" You know, and they open the top of the basket, and this guy is like, Cobra's completely asleep because he probably hasn't eaten in days. And then they tap him on the head with their flute. They usually have a little flute. And they hit the cobra in the head, and then he wakes. He goes, oh, man. And he goes up, and he goes, you know, like that. Then the guy goes, doo-doo-doo, like this, and then the cobra goes, you know, completely, you know, just performing, so he gets some food or whatever. And he goes back to his basket. So Ananta Shesh, he's holding the whole universe on his head, you know, the whole material, you know, whole universe on his head. And when he hears Krishna's flute, he starts swaying. And I, this isn't Vidagdhamata of this description, but somewhere else I remember reading the description that when Krishna is playing like in Maharas dance, such an extraordinary tune on his flute, calling all the gopis in very special tunes for each gopi, blending their name and their particular name and bhav, he blends into the music that he plays, into the sangeet. So there's Radha sangeet, Lalita sangeet, Vishakha sangeet, and then they are moving on the waves of that loving sound vibration emanating from Krishna's flute and coming to the appropriate Sanket Kunj to meet Krishna and join him in his Maharas dance on the banks of the Yamuna. So when Ananta Shesh hears that sound, it says that he goes so much into ecstasy, his neck stretches and he goes all the way back like this, and then he kind of leans back and he hits Korma. And Korma, he's like under the Mandara mountain. I don't know how this all fits in terms of geography. I'm not too good on the whole geography of all this, you know, Ilava Tavarsh and Bhumandal and all that. But somehow it's described that Ananta Shesh, he goes in such ecstasy, he goes, whoa! And he stretches all the way back like this. And then when he touches back, he hits Korma's back, his shell. This is in one of the writings that I read by, I think it's maybe, I don't know, Sananda Goswami, I can't remember. And Korma becomes, because Korma's kind of sleeping, and he becomes a little disturbed. Hey, who's that? And he sticks his head out of his shell, and he looks back, you know, hey, what are you doing? Stop, you know, bother me. So this is, you know, all these kind of extraordinary things are happening when Krishna plays his flute. And as Rupa says in Vidagdhamadav, Ananta Shesha starts swaying like an enchanted cobra in a basket. And then there's a beautiful section in Ananta Leela where the Lord Chaitanya, he's remembering Vrindavan, and he's tasting some prasadam, which of course is, he's not just tasting the prasadam, but the incredible substance mixed in the Krishna prasadam, which is the phala, or the Krishna Adhara Amrita, the nectar of Krishna's lips, which is invariably mixed within the prem bhog of a pure devotee's offering. Krishna will accept and mix and taste that and return it to him as this prem prasad, Adhara Amrita. And when one tastes it, they taste such wonderful experience. So Lord Chaitanya, he was tasting, he said to his associates, he said, we've all had these things before. We've had rice and milk and cheese and spices and sugar and salt. But what is it that makes these same things combined in these ways as kachoris and rice and sabji and halva and sweets? It's such an extraordinary taste. And everyone said, well, our master, you will have to tell us, Mahaprabhu. You are a great master. You please enlighten us on this matter. And then Lord Chaitanya, he started to explain. Actually, what it is that it's Krishna's saliva. It's Amrit from his lips. Adhara Amrita. It's his phala, Krishna phala. And that's exhilarating our hearts and enervating our minds with a transcendental taste and experience, which is far, far superior to anything we've ever met in this material world. And then seeing the mood that Lord Chaitanya is now entering in terms of Krishna Smaranam, and remembering Krishna, and remembering the taste of Krishna's lips, and remembering those times when she or he, you could say Mahaprabhu in the mood of Radharani, when she would taste Krishna's lips during Rasa dance in Vrindavan and other times, then Sri Damodar would start singing appropriate bhajans, Padavali Kirtan or Leela Kirtan. And on the waves of these poetical descriptions, Lord Chaitanya would ride. His mind would ride on those waves, Prema Taranga, the waves of the Prema Katha. His mind would ride on the waves of that wonderful descriptions by Sarva Damodar, and he would become Prema Vesh. and he would enter into Braj Leela, then he would start speaking in the madness of Radharani, describing the beautiful lips of Krishna and a taste of his lips from verse after verse after verse. And of course, this has all been given to us by one great Rasika Vaishnava named A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who gave us the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I can only imagine what kind of experiences he must have had at 1 o'clock in the morning in Mayapur and Hawaii and Paris and London and all over the place, or all over the planet, let's say, translating these passages from Bengali into English for the benefit of all of us fallen souls. Certainly, that was great mercy on his part. And he did it all in 2 months. That was the other extraordinary thing, or rather they printed it in 2 months. I think it took him about 4 or 5 months to translate the whole thing. And he brought it to L.A. in 75, and he said, okay, so you printed Adi Leela, so now, what's the printing schedule? Rameshwar Prabhu was in charge of BBT. He said, well, I think we can do one book every 2 months, and it should be about 17 volumes, so in a year and a half or so, 2 years, it should be done. About 2 years, probably, it should be done. Nice paintings, illustrations. Oh, 2 years. Okay, that's very nice. Okay, well, I'll tell you. You can consider that your spiritual life will come to an end, and you will be totally annihilated spiritually, unless you finish these Chaitanya Charitamritas and print them in 2 months. Okay? But Prabhupada, this, that, the print, anyway, jao. 2 months, chalo. So somehow, well, we were there in L.A. at the time, and we observed the extraordinary transformation that took place in the community, and especially in the BBT workers, that somehow they, with the mercy of Guru, contained in the order, they were able to do that, produce 17 volumes of Chaitanya Charitamrita in 2 months. So we can look in there and find out something about those lips, which produce such nectar that drives the whole world, drives Ananta Shesh mad, and Shiva mad, and Brahma mad, and the gopis mad. And so much is written about those lips and the flute, which is always kissing those lips. It's very nice to read all those things. And then that explains there in that section how the gopis are very jealous of Krishna's flute. And Radharani and Lord Chaitanya, the Mother Radharani, she speaks many verses chastising that other competitor, the flute, saying that it's not fair. Why are you always tasting the nectar of Krishna's lips, which is especially meant for us? So Krishna's flute, which is part of his Venu Madhurya, one of his four special qualities that Narayan doesn't have, and Vishnu doesn't have, and Ram doesn't have, and nobody has but him, is his Venu Madhurya, which we're discussing. And it plays a very crucial, intimate role in Krishna's Madhurya Leela. That's why it's called Venu Madhurya, because it's a sweet actor in the drama of Krishna's pastimes, and especially in his pastimes of Madhurya. But you see, in all his pastimes, his flute, Krishna sleeps with his flute, he eats with his flute, he walks with his flute, he talks with his flute, he speaks with his flute. He does everything with his flute. And he's never separated from his flute. Even when he sleeps, he holds his flute in his hand when he sleeps. So this is something about Krishna's flute. The real thing is, it's okay, it's really nice, we're hearing about the flute, but the real mood, when we hear all this, what we should get from it all is, well, when am I going to hear it? When am I going to hear Krishna's flute? Tomorrow, tonight at 6 o'clock when I chant my Gayatri, Kam Gayatri? Will I hear Krishna's flute? Tomorrow morning, right, 24 minutes before sunrise? If you're that exact. will I hear Krishna's flute? Or maybe at noon. Because Krishna's flute is there in the Maha Mantra, Krishna's flute is there in the Kam Gayatri. So these type of, hearing these type of glorifications and extraordinary qualities and actions of Krishna's flute, should become a stimulant for us,
to become a stimulant, an udipana, to hasten our surrender and to increase our improve our practice of chanting and meditating. Because when Brahma heard the sound of Krishna's transcendental flute, which has does all these wonderful things to gopis and cobras and Brahmas and Shivas and everyone, when he heard that, and he became so astounded and amazed and captivated and transformed, when he heard it, it entered his ear holes and went to his heart, like any mantra. And then the mantra danced in his heart, and it worked in his heart. And to create the purity in his heart so he could perceive the holy Dham. And then he spoke with full realization of what he had heard and what he understood. And what he spoke was the Kam Gayatri. So that's the sound that he heard. So Krishna's flute is that Kam Gayatri. It's a very sweet sound. It's a very relishable sound. And it's full of his name. And it's full of his leela. And it's full of his prema. Pushpamanaya, Ananga. You know, Ananga, who's Ananga? Ananga Mandri. Right? Kamadevaya, Vidmane, Pushpamanaya, Ananga, Ananga. Ananga is Radharani's little sister. And Ananga Mandri has her kunj in the middle of Radhakund, floating there. Very mysteriously floating. It's not really in the water or on the water, it's just kind of floating there, but it's connected by a crystal footbridge. And that's where she entertains and serves her beloved Sri Krishna. So Ananga, so much, and just in the Kam Gayatri, there's a whole Madhyan Leela. Whole Madhyan Leela can unfold in Kam Gayatri because the pastimes of Radhakund are part of the midday Leela, midday pastimes, Madhyana, Madhyan. Rupa Goswami states that even one tiny, tiny particle of the sweetness of Krishna's flute is superior to the sweetness of all the sweet sounds of the world put together. The bliss caused by the sound of the flute of Krishna is so intense and penetrating that it reverses the functions of the animate and inanimate objects. So that's, of course, described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that even this the trees exhibit sattvic bhavs, or various signs of spiritual emotions. There's 8 different transformations of the physical body. So the tree also has a physical body. There's a soul there with a physical body. And when the trees hear Krishna's flute, they show transformations in their physical body, in their bodies. It may not be physical, for that matter. But they show transformations. There's shaking, which is like quivering. Their leaves are shaking or trembling. And they're perspiring. They're perspiring. And what is their perspiration? Their perspiration, or they're crying, ashu, or swayed. They're crying or perspiring in the form of honey flowing down their branches, flowing down their trunks from their beehives hanging on their branches. And then it says that they're like vaivarna means change of color from golden to pink, or from blue to a pinkish tinge, like when Krishna and Radharani are affected by intense emotions. Their bodies change in hue and hue and color. So the trees, they have leaves. They have sometimes they're green on the top, and on the bottom it's a little white. So you see, when it's going to rain, the peepal tree, ashwa tree, and other trees, their leaves turn upside down. They kind of turn. They go like this, and you can see that the tree looks kind of white. Because you see the bottom of the leaf becomes prominent, which indicates impending rain. So that is equivalent to like change of color from green to white. This is how the acharyas describe and different things. And not only that, the animate things become inanimate and the inanimate things become animate. So that means moving things become unmoving. So the Yamuna is flowing, and then the Yamuna changes its course and goes upstream instead of downstream. It goes back to Yamunotri. Or the water, this was always one of my favorite descriptions. Visually, it's quite exciting. And Krishna Bhavanamrita, Krishna Chakravartipad says there's so many little bird baths, a little basin, like a little tali made of jewels or marble or something. and a little stand, so the birds of Vrindavan, the parrots, and they can come and they bathe there and drink water and whatnot. So they have water in them, some Yamuna water or something. So the birds go there and they drink the water, but then Krishna starts playing his flute. So then the water inside of those basins, it turns to ice. The liquid turns to solid. And then the birds that are there, like sipping the water, they get their beaks stuck inside. When they can't get their beaks out because the water freezes, it turns to stone, and they get their beaks stuck. So when I read that, because you like to think of all these things and try to see these things that you read. So I was thinking, that's an extraordinary sight. Five or six parrots, you know, with their beaks stuck in a frozen, you know, bird bath. A really extraordinary sight. Imagine if you're some Russian painter or something, you make a painting of this, you know. You know, because Prabhupada once said, he said to Mother Jadarani, the artist, you can illustrate every shloka of the Bhagavatam. You can make a painting for every shloka of the Bhagavatam. So it's 18,000 verses, right? So the same thing, any shastra, that's like the Bhavanamrita's 2,100 shlokas or something. You could illustrate every, or even many paintings for one shloka. So, and of course, some of our god brothers, they have their disciples doing that. Chief Ramaraj has somebody in Hungary or somewhere over there. They're illustrating different scenes from Govinda Lilamrita and Bhavanamrita, which have appeared in his recent publication, Veno Gita. Those are right out of they're described in words, and these books by the Acharyas and his artists have painted them quite nicely. Quite good job, you can see in that book. So, Krishna's flute, so then that's the solid, liquid things become solid, and then they change their course of direction. Then the rocks on Govardhan Hill, they're different colors. And usually, the Palinda women, they gather those things and they crush them into powders and they sell them to the gopis and the gopas and mothers, and they decorate Krishna and gopis' face with these different colored mineral powders, yellow and saffron and orange and pinkish and all kind of different colored earths there are. And there are many different colors of earth. So these different rocks on Govardhan Hill, when they hear Krishna's flute, then they melt, and they turn into pools of water, into rivers. So these red rivers come down Govardhan, red and yellow and white and pink and all different brown and light brown and dark brown and mustard color, and they all just start, you know, going down, and rivers of, you know, psychedelic colors, rivers flowing down the bank, the sides of Govardhan. So these are some of the descriptions of Krishna's flute. And you can see that in the Bhagavatam, there's a whole chapter of Veno Gita, chapter 21 of the 10th canto, which the gopis describe all the wonderful characteristics of that flute playing, of that flute of Krishna. You see Krishna, and he's always with his flute. Veno Madhurya. So, anything else? So this verse also, it talks about his Rupa Madhurya, his eyes blooming like lotus petals, right? So Krishna's form is head bedecked with peacock feather, figure tinged with the hue of blue clouds. His unique loveliness is charming millions of cupids. So Krishna's form is throughout the Bhagavatam and various places it describes Krishna's form. I remember reading one verse from the Bhagavatam, and just this phrase, it always, because it was simple to remember, Nature Mahotsav, because we know what a Mahotsav is. Maha Utsav means great festival, and Nature means I. So it explained that when the gopis see the smiling face of Krishna, it is a festival for their eyes. It is a festival for their eyes. It's like we have a festival, like food festivals, music festival, music and arts festival, cultural festival, music festival, arts festival, food festival. So we have Vaishnava Mahotsav and Janmashtami Mahotsav and Tirubhav Mahotsav, the disappearance day of Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Prabhupada, an appearance day. So there's also, the gopis have their Mahotsav also. It's a nature Mahotsav, a festival for the eyes. So I thought, wow, what a beautiful phrase. The smiling face of Krishna is a festival for the eyes. When the gopis see the face of Krishna, it's a nature Mahotsav. So someday we may have that experience. When we see the face of Krishna, we may feel that we're attending a great, a wonderful festival. The real beauty is Krishna and Radharani. One who is attracted by the beauty of Radha and Krishna cannot be attracted by the false beauty of this material world. Prabhupada's purport, 3rd canto, chapter 20, verse 31. So this is this verse 30 that we're discussing discusses the Vena Madhurya and Rupa Madhurya of Krishna. So that's why we're discussing something about Krishna's flute and something about his beautiful form. Because the more we hear about Krishna, the more we become attracted. This is a Madhya Leela. It says that Krishna's body is a city of attractive features, and it is sweeter than sweet. Krishna's face, which is like the moon, is sweeter still. And the gentle smile on that moon-like face is like the rays of moonshine. The smile on Krishna's face is just like the smiling of the moon, which generates greater and greater happiness for the gopis. Krishna's complexion is the color of a blue lotus flower or a blue sapphire. And it is as enchanting as a tamal tree or a group of black rain clouds. Krishna is an ocean of nectarine handsomeness. Govindaji wears yellow garments and a garland of forest flowers, and he's decorated with various jewels. He's a great reservoir of the nectar of many transcendental pastimes. He has long, curling hair, and he's anointed with many fragrant scents. Shamsundar's handsome crown is decorated with many different fragrant flowers from the forest. Gopinath's handsome forehead is splendidly decorated with tilak markings and curly locks of hair. The playful movements of Damodar's raised dark eyebrows enchant the hearts of the gopis. Murli Manohar's rolling eyes are as splendid as red and blue lotus flowers. Vrindavan Chandra's ears and cheeks are decorated with earrings made of various jewels. Madhav's handsome face is as splendid as millions of moons, and Sri Krishna speaks many charming jokes, and his chin is exquisitely handsome. Krishna wears a locket around his neck, which sits on his chest, and it contains a picture of Sri Radha. And Radharani wears a locket around her neck, and it contains a picture of Sri Krishna. So when they're lying around here and there, like Krishna's lying in Gwalpur, he takes the gopas and he goes to the side, to the east side of Govardhan in the morning, 10:30 in the morning, and he finds some nice shady trees, and there's a beautiful lake there, Gwalpur, and they lie there, and then they open up their tiffin carriers and their baskets, and they start a kind of a furious marketplace of trading prasadam trading like the stock exchange. So they start trading samosas for rasgullas and sandesh for burfi and kachoris for puris and all these kind of things, because one boy has one thing and the other boy has a different thing. And so they sit around, trade prasadam, and they munch and crunch and they drink and slurp, and then they discuss different things. Then my Krishna's lying there, he's looking in his locket, and he's looking at Radharani's face, and he's saying, yes, because it opens up, it has a little closed, like a thing on it, you know, like a cameo, cameo, it's a little door, and you open it, and you see it, and you close it, and no one else sees it. So you only open it when you're by yourself, because you don't open your heart to anyone and everyone. You only open your heart to yourself, or to someone who you trust. So Krishna, when he's there with the boys, but when they're not looking or they start to doze off to sleep, then he looks Then he thinks, oh, I have to see my Swamini, I have to see my Radharani. So then Madhumangal and Subal, they understand Krishna's mind. So in Madhumangal, he goes to one calf and he pinches that calf, and then the calf gets scared and runs away. And then Subal wakes up the boys. Oh, look, look, one of Krishna's calves ran away. We have to go find him. Oh, you go, everyone go back to sleep. Madhumangal and Krishna, we'll go, we'll try to catch that calf and bring him back. You just relax, we'll be back in a short while. Oh, okay. So everyone goes back to sleep. So then Subal, Madhumangal and Krishna, they go off to Kusan Sarovara and to Ashokvan. And there they meet some Brindadevi and Kundalata and some other sakis and find out what the next program is going to be, so to speak. So decorated with a necklace of pearls, the beauty of Brijendranandan's neck enchants the residents of the three planetary systems. Adorned with a necklace of pearls and a Kaustubha gem which shines like lightning, Mukunda's handsome chest longs to enjoy the company of the beautiful gopis. Krishna received, this is interesting, this is from Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika by Rupa Goswami. It's one of those things, some people may know, but some people when they hear this they might say, oh, I never knew that. Krishna received his Kaustubha jewel from the Kaliya serpent's wives, who gave this jewel to Krishna Chandra with their own hands. Who can describe the Kaustubha jewel? A ruby. It's a red ruby, and it's in a locket. It hangs around his neck, so it's surrounded by gold, you know, and a chain. And what's it? What is there? Anything else? Is there anything inscribed in it? Cow. Surabhi cow. It's not, what it is. It's like inset jewel work. Very, it's a red ruby from what I understand, from what I've read and heard. Maybe wrong, but this is the way I understand it. That it's a red ruby and then inset, which means that they take the red ruby and then they carve out of the center of the red ruby, they carve the shape of a Surabhi cow, side view of a Surabhi cow, you know, standing, you know, side view, two, like that, you know, from the side. Front legs, back legs, head, neck, side, udders, tail, you know. So, and that's carved out, that part is carved out of the center of the ruby, and then something, and then either it's moonstone or mother of pearl, maybe moonstone. It's a white stone like pearl or moonstone. That's carved in that shape of a Surabhi cow and an inset. That's what it means, insets. Two jewels in one. But it's done so perfectly that, and then, because when they were painting pictures of Paramatma in the early days for Prabhupada's books, there was a picture of Paramatma and he was wearing his Kaustubha mani. And they asked Prabhupada, what is it? And he said, it's like a red ruby with a Surabhi cow in the middle. So that's what they painted. Anyone who was observant and saw the early paintings, they would have seen, or especially they saw the originals, that were, many of them were in L.A. while we were there, they would have seen that there's that Antaryami Chaturbhuj Narayan, in his forearms, he's standing there with his Kaustubha mani, his Kaustubha necklace with a red ruby and with a Surabhi cow in the middle. But what happened is when Krishna was pulverizing Kaliya with his dancing steps, with his Rasleela there going on his 100 hoods, then all his wives were coming out of their little, you know, snake holes, and they were like, oh, kind of disturbed that their husband was getting, you know, pretty severe headache. Pretty severe headache, and, you know, all of his sins were coming out of his mouth, and it wasn't looking too handsome at that time. And they were a little disturbed, so they wanted to kind of help him out and relieve him from his distress. So they were praying, and they were offering so many prayers, the prayers by the Nagapatnis, the very nice prayers. And then Krishna wasn't paying much attention. Then they started giving their jewelry, and still Krishna didn't pay attention. And they started giving their clothes, and then Krishna paid a little more attention. And so that's described in one kalpa. Sanatan Goswami explains in one kalpa that the Nagapatnis, they offered jewels because snakes have so many jewels. Because snakes themselves, some snakes, they produce jewels in their head. on certain nakshatras when there's a certain combination of different stars and constellations called nakshatras. Then it rains, the rains fall down through the Swati nakshatra or Rohini, especially Swati, and it falls on the head of an elephant, or it falls in the ocean, or it falls on a serpent, on a cobra. Then when it falls on their head, it produces some jewel, some rare diamond, a diamond or ruby or different kinds of jewels. So in the society of snakes, they're always trading lots of jewels back and forth. You know, the snakes are producing jewels from their heads. So one snake king is, you know, because snakes have their whole society. So Kali was a king of snakes, and he had beat up a lot of other snakes. And no, it's a fact. I'm serious. They have their own, you know, same as we do, fighting, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Ahara, Nidra, Maitun, Bayam. So he beat up a lot of other snakes, and he, when he beat them up, and he got all their jewels. So then he gave them, naturally, like any good husband, he gave all the jewels to his wives. You know, because even snake ladies like jewels. So, at any rate, they had all these jewels given to them by their, you know, faithful husbands. And so now in a time of need, it was time to hawk the jewels. So they so they came out with the jewels in their hands and said, please take these. So Krishna looked, oh, look at that one. It's a Surabhi cow. What are you doing with that? You don't need that. Give me that. And then so that's how Krishna got the Kaustubha gem. It was given to him by the Naga Patnis. Jaya Dvija Patni Jaya Naga Kanyagan. Right? So we glorify them. Krishnadas, Siddha Krishnadas of Vrindavan, he wrote such a beautiful song. You know, he's glorifying the wives of snakes. Nice, huh? So everyone can be honored and respected. The Nagapatnis, they presented their jewels, their different jewels, and their clothes, and then they presented their cholis, their blouse. So Krishna took their blouses, Nand Goswami explains in one kalpa, then I think I told this before, and he tied a rope, he made a rope out of them. And then he put the rope through Kali, somehow he tied it around through Kali's nose or whatever, he tied it around him and made like a reins of a horse, or like a rope. And then he snapped his fingers and said, okay, let's go. So then he rode Kaliya, and he sat on top of Kaliya's hoods, and Kaliya was like this, and he sat up on his hoods, holding on, and Krishna went zzz, down to Mathura, not to Mathura, but just the edge, down the Jamuna to the border of Mathura Vrindavan, and back to Kaliya got just around like that, and all the wives of the Nagas, you know, Kaliya was, oh my God, what's this? But he was very pleased. He got a very happiness, nice happiness with that offering. And so then he blessed them, and they all became great devotees, the Nagapatnis. So this is something about Krishna's beauty and how he got his different jewels. My dear friend, if you're indeed attached to your worldly friends, then don't look at the smiling face of Govinda as he stands on the bank of the Yamuna at Keshigad. Casting sidelong glances, Govinda places his flute to his lips, which seemed like newly blossomed lotus buds. Govinda's transcendental body, bending in three places, appears very bright in the full moonlight. This is the reverse, kind of reverse psychology of Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. In other words, he's like a warning. Watch out! If you want to stay in Maya, if you want to stay in Maya with friends and family, wife and kith and kin, and wife and husband, and then don't go. Don't go to Keshigad. And don't look at the face of Govinda. And don't listen to his flute. Because if you do, no more Delhi. Delhi goes to Heli. You know, your family's finished, your friends are finished. It's, hey, what happened to you? Shave your head, you don't come and see us anymore. No more soccer, no more parties, no more disco. What happened to you, man? You're really weird, strange, and all you want to do is Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You're crazy, man. So that's what happens. We get captivated by this sweet little flute-playing coward boy of Vrindavan. And we just run away from home. We run away from our families. We run away from our countries. We don't want to see our countries. We don't want to see our families. And people in the material world think we've gone crazy. But we think we've found the perfection of life. Ornamented with bracelets and armlets, Madhupati's arms hang down to his knees. Gokulachandra's reddish lotus hands are decorated with various auspicious signs. Radhanath's charming abdomen is a pleasure abode of handsomeness. Radharaman's nectarine back seems to beg for the playful touch of the beautiful gopis. The nectarine lotus flower that is Rasabihari's hips bewilders Cupid. Rasaraj Sri Krishna's knees are very splendid, charming, and handsome jewel boxes in which he keeps the treasure house of the gopis' minds.
So nice. Ordinarily knees are pretty ugly. Somebody show me your knees, it's like, I don't get too excited about anybody's knees. You know, knees, this is the knees. They're usually knobbly and gnarly and bumpy and they don't look so nice, man or woman. But Krishna's knees are like beautiful blue sapphire treasure chests. And inside those treasure chests, he keeps the minds of the gopis. You know? That verse from Vidagdha Madhav by Rupa Goswami. And the second part, the first part is in Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika. Did you ever get your mind lost in those knees of Krishna? Murari's thighs are like two beautiful plantain trees that charm the hearts of all women. Madan Mohan's charming lotus feet are decorated with jeweled ankle bells. The bottom of Shyam's feet have the luster of roses, and they are decorated with 19 auspicious markings. Govardhan Nath's handsome lotus feet are two oceans filled with the happiness of pure love. Sri Krishna's reddish toes are decorated with rows of full moons that shine as his beautiful toenails. Krishna's face is decorated with many designs and earrings resembling sharks known as Makara Kundala. His eyes are very beautiful and perfectly shaped. His cheeks are brilliant, and his smiling face attracts everyone in creation. Whoever sees Krishna sees a daily festival. Krishna's face and body are satisfying for everyone to see. That's 9th canto, chapter 24, verse 65. That's the verse. Whoever sees Krishna sees a daily festival. Any questions about these points? A gorgeous dresser. Generally, there are four kinds of garments on the body of Krishna. His shirt, his turban, his belt, and his wearing garments. In Vrindavan, Krishna used to put on reddish garments with a golden shirt on his body and an orange-colored turban on his head. The different kinds of belts combined with Krishna's enchanting smile used to always increase the transcendental bliss of his associates. This dress of Krishna is described as gorgeous. Nectar Devotion, chapter 26. This is Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika. On his body, Krishna wears many ornaments made from precious pearls, gems, gold, and other materials. Like Radha, Krishna wears many decorations made from Vrindavan's elegant flowers. Krishna wears flower crowns, flower chokers, earrings, necklaces, armlets, sashes, anklets, and even a pair of flower shoes, which cover the entire top and sides of his lotus feet. That's in Radhakrishna Ganadesh Deepika, because in Gopal Champu, I believe it's Gopal Champu or Vaishnav Toshini, the commentaries on 10th Canto by Sanatan Goswami, he says that in Vrindavan, Krishna doesn't wear any shoes, whereas in Mathura and Dwarka, because he's in the Rajvesh, or he's in the dress of a king, that he wears shoes, golden slippers or whatever. But here, these aren't exactly like, this isn't Aishwarya, golden slippers or some costly type shoes. These are just kind of rasika shoes that the gopis make for him out of flowers, flower shoes. So I don't imagine they last that long. And can't wear them very far, I suppose. But at any rate, Rupa Goswami tells us this, that they cover the top
the top and the sides of his feet. Obviously, they don't cover the bottom of his feet. So it's just a decoration. It's not really a functional shoe. Whereas in Mathura and Dwarka, he wears a functional shoe. Right? A real shoe that you wear that has that goes on the bottom of your feet and the sides and the top. But these are just like fake shoes or something. Decoration. There are just some decorations on his feet. And Krishna Karnamrita Bilvamangala Thakur explains that the beautiful lotus eyes of Krishna can produce ecstatic love of God if one ever once receives Krishna's merciful glance. This is one verse in Krishna Karnamrita. Because in the bodily youth, Krishna's complexion is compared to a monsoon cloud plus a newly blossomed blue lotus plus blue sapphires and the glossy shine of the trunk of a tamal tree. So that's the hue of his body. Bilvamangala Thakur, of course, he was a woman hunter. And he was hunting prostitutes. And one prostitute named Chintamani, he said, you know, you're so mad after flesh and so lusty for woman and enjoying woman. If you had the same kind of lust and the same kind of madness to attain God and to attain Krishna, you could get liberation and go to the Nitya Dham and live eternally in the Satchidananda Dham, in the blissful realm of the spiritual world, in the spiritual kingdom. If you just use so much, you have so much energy and so much determination to enjoy Maya, you should use the same determination and energy to attain Krishna. So, and then he said, well, where's Krishna? He said, and Chintamani the prostitute said, he's in Vrindavan. Why don't you go search him over there? So then, while he was a sadhaka, on his way to Vrindavan, and not yet a liberated soul, Krishna was very kind to him and gave him two darshans, even as a sadhaka. So this, and Krishna gave him the eyes to see him. So that's why, and then when he saw him, then he had this extraordinary change of consciousness, and he wrote this verse in Krishna Karnamrita, that one who sees the beautiful lotus eyes of Krishna, just by seeing Krishna, his beautiful lotus eyes, it can produce ecstatic love in one, because that was his direct experience. So maybe someday, somewhere, at some time, we may be blessed with the beautiful darshan of Sri Krishna and have the same experience of Bilvamangala Thakur when he perceived the Rupa Madhurya of Krishna, that he attained ecstatic love for Shyam Sundar. Sri Krishna Bhagavan Ki Jai.